this isn't going to be the best day of your life. It's going to suck. And so what can you do that is the kindest, most loving thing that you can do for yourself?
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 45 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. In our last few episodes, Christy Turner and myself have helped you understand if it's time for memory care, how to find memory care, and just what is memory care. Now, in this episode, Christy, who has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care, shares her tips to help you make a successful move into memory care. Christy is also a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. Using her 16 years of experience in working with over 1,200 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Well, hello, Christy. It's great to have you back on the Alzheimer's Podcast to continue our conversation on memory care.
Pleasure to be here.
So, Christy, in your article, Moving Your Parent into Memory Care, you start off by saying, as a former memory care director and a family member who's had multiple experiences with memory care placement, I know plenty of insider information on what to expect when you're moving your parent into memory care. So, of course, I'm excited to have you share with our listeners on what this insider information is. And so what is the first thing our listeners should be aware of?
I think the first thing really is they need to be aware of the fact it is going to be an emotional tsunami. And this is one of the things that I think typically just really takes people by surprise. They don't see it coming, and or they have maybe a little niggling voice that in their head, like, oh, this might be kind of hard, but they stuff it down and stuff it down and stuff it down, going, I'm just going to get through this. And then it's like they just get knocked over.
Right. And I was mentioning to you before we went on the air here, I saw that several times when I was attending support groups as part of my research. And it's everything from the guilt that they're letting their parent or their spouse down to just the ability of putting their loved one's care into someone else's hands. There's just such a wide range of emotions that overcome our care partners.
Absolutely, there are. And I think when, you know, you're still going to have to go through those things, but when you at least know that it's coming, you eliminate the shock factor. I just saw that so many times that we worked out a pretty good system when I was a memory care director, where we'd have the direct care team would whisk away our new resident and get them involved. We'd always have them move in at a time when there was a lot of activity going on, a lot of fun stuff, and help them make friends and show them around and all of that. And I would have the family member come with me. We'd go into my office, shut the door, and then I was just there for the complete breakdown. And it's okay. You know, that needs to happen. And people were able to do it in a safe environment, without a bunch of witnesses. But it happened every single time, whether it was a daughter, a spouse, a son, whoever the family member was that was making that move happen. Every single time, they all had the same reaction, which was just an emotional, I don't want to call it a breakdown. People
release.
They were okay, but yeah, an emotional release that is just universal. And all that means is that you love somebody.
Right.
And that's okay.
So what we're trying to do is help our listeners know that it's going to be part of the process. And mm-hmm. they hopefully, by knowing it's the tsunami's coming, they can be prepared for it and understand that they need to accept and work through it. And the emotions aren't going to stop just on that first day, right? They're going to be there every day, pretty much.
Right, exactly. And this is another big piece that I found for family care partners that, you know, had maybe didn't have an ideal relationship with their parents growing up, or, you know, if it was a spouse, you know, maybe they didn't have they had a rough patch in their marriage. And so basically what I'm talking about is people who have been through counseling or therapy, thinking that all of these issues were resolved, and then are just absolutely shocked when it's like a boomerang, it comes flying back. All of this stuff bubbles up to the surface again. And they're like, what? I dealt with all of this. I just describe it this way. So any traumatic event is going to, whether we're really conscious of it or not, it comes back up during stressful times for us to re-examine. We look at it with a different lens, and it just happens for everybody. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not doing something wrong. It's just normal. It doesn't mean it's pleasant, but it is normal. And I just always want families to know that, to at least have a little bit of preparation, a little bit of knowledge there. So maybe they can have some forethought into what they're going to do on that day. And I always think that that's a really important thing for families too, is to have a plan for that day. And I always insist with my clients that they do. So we're going to do the move-in on, let's say, you know, Monday at 10 a.m. And let's say you're going to be in the community until 11 a.m. And so what is the plan for the rest of the day? And I'm talking about a specific plan, not a, oh, I'll see how I feel, or mm-hmm. no. I'm talking about, you know, your sister is meeting you for lunch, or you're doing this with your sister, and then you are going to lunch, or you're going to your house, and you guys are going to sit on the sofa, and your husband's going to be the cabana boy and wait on you two hand and foot, and you're just going to like eat junk food and watch Oprah or whatever it is, you know, and actual plan, just knowing this isn't going to be the best day of your life. It's going to suck. And so what can you do that is the kindest, most loving thing that you can do for yourself in that situation? Do that, because you deserve it. And the care partners a lot of times get lost in the equation, which is understandable. We're looking for making sure our person is safe and happy and all of that. Once you have sort of handed off the baton, so to speak, your person is in that secured environment, it's up to the staff there right now to meet those needs. You need to meet your needs, or have a support person near you who's going to meet your needs. Your person is okay. You have needs too. Those need to be met.
And I think that's why episode, I believe it was 43, where you talked about what are the deal breakers? What is your deal breaker? I think that was
episode 42. Right?
I think that was a great episode to help our care partners know and accept that, you know, they're at this point and this was the decision, and they have that backup to help them accept the fact that this is, they're making this decision. So mm-hmm. for our listeners, make sure you check out that episode. So Christy, one of the things that's going through my mind, and I know there's a debate out there on the right approach, and is some care communities say stay and spend the day with your loved one. Other care communities say don't come back for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And do you have, I'll put you on the spot, do you have a strong opinion, or an opinion maybe, on those approaches?
Well, yes, I have strong opinions about everything. That's part of the magic that is me. So I would say this. These are kind of some important guidelines to keep in mind when it comes to thinking about this. Number one, always know that as the family care partner, you are the expert in your person. period. Okay. So you're hopefully moving them into a place where they're going to be surrounded by experts in dementia care, but you're the expert on your person. So keeping that in mind, I hope that when you're making this move, you transfer that knowledge to the care team that is going to be there responding to your person. That's going to be really key in them being able to do their jobs and meet your person's needs. It is important to know that by law, you cannot be prevented from seeing your person, from visiting your person, unless, of course, there's a restraining order. And if you have a restraining order against you, I doubt you're listening to this show.
Right.
So short of that, you can always visit your person. Now, if we're looking at what's in your person's best interest, not yours, your person's, what's going to be in their best interest is having a good plan for move-in day, which is they're going to move in when there's a time of high activity. It's naturally going to go the rhythm throughout the day. The team, the care team, has a good plan in place. And your person starts making those connections with the care team and relying on the care team to meet their needs or to help meet their needs or to assist them, right? A different way to put this is, I'll tell you a bad example of when things went sideways. We had a resident move in who wanted her daughter to do everything for her, and her daughter thought that was a good idea too. Long story short, was able to have any type of bond with the staff despite multiple massive attempts to create that, because her daughter needed to feel needed. And her daughter was a high level executive. So you can imagine kind of how ugly the situation turned, how quickly, when this woman was not accepting care from the team, and her daughter needed to drive across town for her to agree to personal hygiene tasks. That's a problem. And her daughter, we did explain all of this to her prior to moving in and all of that, but her daughter just found ultimately she was not able to let go of the role that she had previously been playing before her mom moved in. So she was not able to have any level of trust with the staff, and it created a situation that was difficult for her mom, for her, and for the team. And to just be perfectly blunt, to my mind, there is no good reason why a person should need to sit in their own waste more than a nanosecond. But that was ultimately how this situation played out, because she absolutely refused care from the team, was not able to care for herself, and we had to wait for her daughter. And I mean, I'm very creative on approaches. I worked with a very talented team. We literally tried everything multiple times, multiple different ways, multiple different people. She would not accept care from the team. And that's kind of the point of why you have your person moving into memory care, is so that that team can meet their needs and keep them safe. If you are at a point where you don't feel willing to do that, you probably should not be making the move. So that would be the downside of deciding that I'm going to stay all day and I'm going to do that for multiple days in a row, is that there's no transfer of trust, no ability to bond with the team.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So was that appropriately wishy-washy for an answer?
Yeah. Yeah, well, just like with anything with dementia, there's really never a black and white answer. But I mean, I think all communities have different policies and approaches, and you have to find the one that you're comfortable with and try to stay open-minded, because they are, as you said, the dementia care experts. They've done this dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of times.
Right. And I always say, you know, don't be afraid to ask why. So whatever is recommended or proposed, ask, okay, you know, I don't really understand, or my gut reaction is I don't like this. Can you tell me more about it? Can you ask me why, or can you explain to me why you're recommending this or proposing this? That's a perfectly legitimate question to ask.
Right. And What do you think about the mother and daughter visiting the community before move-in day?
I always am kind of curious about what the motivation is to bring a parent into a proposed memory care community. And typically, it is along the lines of, I want it to be a place that mom's going to like. And that really glosses over the fact that I have yet to meet a person who's like, yes, I would love to move out of my own home with all of my own things that I've accumulated over the last 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years and go to a place where I know none of these people and have you tell me that I don't need to be sad about it. It's really going to be a trip to Disneyland. That's kind of how that actually plays out. And so what happens for the daughter in that situation is she sets herself up for a really ugly situation when her mom is not at all grateful, does not see the need for this to happen. And it just creates a lot of tension in the relationship and a lot of bad feelings that don't need to be there.
Okay.
So I'm not a
fan. So it doesn't create like a familiarity with the place, with the loved one or your person?
There are some communities where they have a day program and the person has been going to the day program for, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. That's familiarity.
Okay.
They've been going there every day. They recognize team members. They know other people. That's familiarity. Taking someone to visit a care community a couple of times or to go there for lunch once or twice, that's not familiarity. We're talking about a person who's living with dementia.
Right.
And in those types of situations, what I see happen is the daughter saying things like, don't you remember I brought you here last week? Don't you remember the food was great? Don't you remember? No, your person doesn't remember. And that's really tough, I know. But your person doesn't remember. And we don't want to do things that are going to increase confusion or cause anxiety. So this goes back to when do we share information and kind of what mental age is your person at in this process? So if your person is at a mental age of, say, a six-year-old, what would you do with an actual six-year-old? Would you share a lot of anxiety invoking or anxiety producing information well in advance? I don't think you would. So that's something that it's hard for us to keep in mind when we're looking at our 74-year-old dad, right? Because he's 74 and he looks like everything's okay. But that may not be what the actual situation is in his brain. So we also want to do the kindest, most loving thing we can do for our person. And most often that includes not oversharing.
And I believe in your article, you used the example of taking your child to get a shot at the doctor's office or something. Would you tell them several times before they were going to get it, or would you just kind of let it happen?
Right, exactly. You just roll with it in the moment, like, that nurse, I can't believe she did that, right? So you never, as a family member, you never want to have the target on your back. That always, you always push that off to other people. So yeah, not a fan of the big preview tour, and isn't this going to be exciting and fun?
Okay.
And no,
so
it's not.
You talk about, you know, you said the 50, 60, 70 years worth of stuff. So let's talk about how the loved one can, or the adult child or spouse can plan for bringing in essentials into the their loved one's new room, if you will.
Yeah. So here's another temptation to avoid, because I've seen this one hundreds of times. Families will go, hey, I'm just going to buy all new stuff. And it'll look, and so they've been looking at, I don't know, House Beautiful for years. And they're like, I'm going to turn this apartment into, well, that is great. But maybe, you know, if you really need to express yourself creatively and artistically that way, maybe redo a room in your home, not where your parent or your spouse is going to be moving, because for them, familiarity is the name of the game. So we want to have that apartment set up with lots of familiar objects. So familiar bedspread, familiar sheets, familiar pictures. We want to go for as much familiarity as possible where important things are there and it's set up and ready to roll as you walk in the door. So there's going to be some creativity involved on your end as far as figuring out how you're going to maybe get some of these objects out of the house and to the new place and getting your timing down and making sure that it's all ready before your person moves in. But it is worth the effort of planning it out and doing that, because that is going to give your person a sense of security and, that familiarity, seeing those things that they've been seeing for years or the first thing in the morning when they open their eyes is always seeing that lamp. Bring that lamp. Give them that sense of security. They're already losing so much. Security is, that feeling is really priceless if we think about it for any of us. When you feel secure, you can accomplish pretty much anything. You can do pretty much anything because that's just one of those base needs.
And I assume that the memory care community has some guidelines and some just suggestions on what to bring and what not to bring and the size of things. And you're not going to be bringing their Lazy Boy chair probably, or
I hope you bring their Lazy Boy
chair.
Really? Oh, absolutely. What? Absolutely. Because, you know, if that's their favorite chair, bring that chair. Absolutely.
So you're telling me that, or us, that some communities would allow you to bring something of that size.
Most of them. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You're going to, go through measurements and all of that prior. You're going to choose the apartment, measure it out, kind of figure out what you can bring. If you're someone who does not enjoy, doing physical moves yourself, hire a senior move manager. And they will actually scope out all of that stuff for you, measurements, and give you a good idea of what, how much can come and how much can't. And, they will literally take care of the heavy lifting. But yeah, definitely bring the Lazy Boy for sure.
Thanks for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. And you talk about not bringing family heirlooms.
Yeah, here's me.
Don't bring valuables.
Please don't.
Tell us.
Please, please, please don't. If there is anything in your person's possession, any item, and that could be, when I say in possession, I'm talking about in the jewelry box, on the hands, around the neck, whatever it is. If you think it's priceless, if you are like, I never really liked it, but it is a family heirloom, we've had it in our family since the Revolutionary War, whatever it is, that is not the kind of thing that belongs in memory care at all, ever. One thing that I think typically families focus on when moving their person into memory care is thinking, because now I know my person's going to be safe and they're going to be in a great environment and their needs are going to be met and they're going to be taken care of. Yes, there was a reason you made this decision, right? And it often has to do with your person becoming increasingly confused or showing impairments in judgment and safety awareness to the point where they need to be in this memory care environment. Guess what? Everybody else's family felt the same way. So all of your person's neighbors are in the same condition. They have the same condition. So they have the same challenges, meaning your person now has, let's say, 40 neighbors that are also confused, don't have great safety awareness, don't have great judgment. So just by nature of dementia, you know, they're going to see something that looks attractive and, okay, I like it. And then another part of their brain goes, it's mine. And that's a new fact. And you're never going to dissuade that other person that that's how it is. So the opportunity for things to get lost, or as we like to call them in memory care, waiting to be found, those opportunities are myriad. And so there's, you know, small items like wedding rings can be flushed down a toilet. They can go in the garbage. I know somebody who even swallowed a wedding ring, and the retrieval was unpleasant, but it was successful. But you know, why take a chance on that kind of stuff? The really great family members that I think, you know, I really appreciate their creative genius here, have taken actual heirloom jewelry or sentimental value jewelry and replaced it with costume jewelry. So no great shakes if something happens to it. But, you know, people living with Alzheimer's, you know, at a certain point in the disease process, they really like shiny, sparkly, you know, things, objects attract their attention. And so I had a memory care that was full of people with, you know, great big cocktail rings that, you know, maybe came from the dollar store or the, you know, the costume jewelry counter at Macy's, you know. So it was a $12 ring that replaced, you know, an engagement ring that had been in the family for generations that was now safely locked away and would be passed on to the next bride in the family. So it was meeting everybody's needs. Just think about really carefully, you know, if whatever the object is, if I showed up at your house right now and took it away from you, how would that feel? No matter what object we're talking about, if you like shrug your shoulders and go, it wouldn't be any great shakes, fine. That's something it's probably okay to take to memory care. If you get a sick feeling in your stomach just at the thought of it being taken away and never seen again, don't bring it into memory care. Really. And that's just a pretty good guideline. The other thing is the closets are just ridiculously small. So don't bring a whole wardrobe. Bring what's seasonally appropriate and swap it out with the seasons.
Right. And you even go into talking about the laundry process in your article and all. And I'll provide a link definitely in the show notes for our listeners on that. If I don't know if you want to touch on that real quick.
I'll say it real quick. You'll hate the laundry system there. That's just pretty much guaranteed. So definitely take a look at the article for tips on how to manage laundry.
So one thing I've seen in a lot of the memory care communities is outside the residence door, there's a, I don't say call it a curio, or there's a little shadow box that has like pictures, certain pictures and family items within that. Can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So the intent, I think, was fantastic. The intent was always to be reflective of who that person is and to help them identify, this is where I belong. And over time, what I've seen it morph into is the really creative artsy person in the family puts together some spectacular collage or, you know, like a blue ribbon in the county fair winning type diorama. And that's great. But again, if you need a creative outlet, definitely find one. But this isn't that. So the purpose is, like, here's a great shadow box. Let's say it is a World War II veteran, a sailor. Have Navy stuff in there, right? And a picture of him from when he was in the Navy. People travel backwards through time as the condition progresses. So we want something that is easily recognizable for them, something that is meaningful for them, something that helps them make an easy association. So if Ray was, you know, a medic on a ship, then put things that make sense for that in his shadow box, then he can easily find his apartment. He knows that's him. And it's also a good way for the staff to have a conversation with him, right? They know some things about him. Not a necessarily great thing is a photo from a family reunion where there's that group shot of all 140 people in your family, where you can't pick anybody out of that lineup. Right. That's not that helpful, just because we're looking for identifying things, important things that are going to help your person figure out where do I belong and help the staff make a quick, easy connection.
So as we wrap up today's episode, Christy, do you have one final tip that we missed that you'd like to share with our listeners?
As far as how to make a move to memory care, I would say really the main thing is please understand that although you are doing this out of love, out of responsibility, you're stepping up, you're doing a difficult thing, please know that your person is not going to thank you for it, is not going to send you a bouquet of roses, is not going to rub their hands together with excitement like they are going to Disneyland. That is not their perception. And the sooner you know that, the easier it will be for you to manage the move in a way that is thoughtful, makes sense, and is the least traumatic route for both you and your person.
It makes a lot of sense. I know it's hard. It'd be hard for our listeners to do, but I hope they take your words to heart and hope it helps them make that transition easier. So.
Yeah, and there really is good info in the article. So I would encourage people to follow that link.
Well, I appreciate you again, Christy, for coming on the Alzheimer's podcast and sharing your insider tips for helping our listeners understand memory care and how to make a move into memory care. I don't remember what we're going to talk about next week, but I know it's memory care.
Next week, we're going to talk about how to avoid making a move into memory care, if that's not what you want to do.
Okay, yeah. So I look forward to that conversation with you. Christy, thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye-bye. This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to visit the show notes for this episode, where you will find all the mentioned resources and a link to past episodes at togetherinthis.com/episode45. Thank you, and we'll talk next week. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.